We head to Sheboygan on the shores of Lake Michigan with its fishing and sailing, surfing, as we talk with mayors from all over Wisconsin on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Sheboygan has just shy of 50,000 residents. City's population has held about steady since the 2010 U.S. Census figures. In its marketing, it's been called the freshwater surf capital of the world, its beaches, the Malibu of the Midwest. Do you live in Sheboygan? What do you want people to know about your city? 800-642-1234. Ryan Sorensen has been mayor since April, previously served for 4 years on the city's Common Council. Mayor Sorensen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Kate. Good morning. How are you doing? I'm glad you got the memo and calling us the Malibu of the Midwest.
I got all the memos, which brings up the point that you're a native of Sheboygan.
Raised, yeah.
You're born and raised, grew up with those beaches. How do you talk about your city to newcomers, or how do you frame your city?
Great question. And we get this all the time, whether we're trying to bring business development to town, whether we're trying to recruit workers. You know, there's so many different accolades and achievements that Sheboygan has been notarized for. Obviously, you listed some there. But, you know, we also have a lot of other accolades, too. We're one of the best places to raise a family, best places to start a business. In 2019, we were rated one of the top cities, best places for millennials to join the workforce. Sheboygan, we always say we have a lot of these big city amenities with that small town feel. We're just truly blessed that we live on truly a great lake on Lake Michigan here. And we really get the resort town feel as well, only usually in the summer, but as well in the winter, too. There's many fun things to do. I love showing people Sheboygan in my hometown and our community too, and everyone just taken aback, amazed by all the awesome things that we have to offer here. It's really a fun and unique city.
But many of the mayors we've been talking with have told us that the lack of housing is a huge problem for their cities and their communities. What is the housing situation like for Sheboygan?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and this is something that I've been laser focused on myself and a lot of our community partners and city staff. The city just recently completed a comprehensive housing study right before the pandemic started, and it really underlined the need for us. So the city of Sheboygan, we have to build about 5,000 new housing units in the next decade just to get caught up and meet pace with the current demand. Sheboygan and the surrounding area, we have a lot of very well-known manufacturers, the Kohler Company, Sargento, Johnsonville, Bemis. You go down the list. All these companies are growing and expanding. And when they grow and expand, they're not just bringing new employees to the areas, they're also bringing their families, their spouses, their kids. So when you talk about one company adding 100 new employees every other year, we need to build homes for those employees and their families as well. And a lot of these are manufacturing based. So we have to make sure we're diversifying our housing stock for workforce housing and startup homes as well. So it's a big issue that we have. Just a few years back before the pandemic, we only had 2 housing permits pulled. And they were pulled by Habitat for Humanity to build a Habitat home and by the Sheboygan Area School District for the students to build a home.
Wow.
I love those organizations and what they do, but we really got to make sure that we're pumping those numbers up. To really making sure that we can get caught up with the pace that we need.
Especially with multi-unit, I mean, you mentioned a diverse range of housing. Yep. You have to talk with developers to say, hey, we need a multi-unit apartment complex or more condos. How do you get those projects off the ground?
Yeah, well, it's really kind of telling the story of Sheboygan and the needs for our families and workers. As well, you know, I would say we need to really focus on the missing middle component. We built a lot of these apartment buildings, which is and they fill up. We have a new 250 housing unit project going on right now with a new apartment complex, and people are signing leases before the project is even complete, which astounds me. But we need to build duplexes. We need to build condos, townhouses, single family homes, affordable housing, senior homes, veteran homes. It's really an all of the above strategy. And it's a lot of collaboration, and it's also getting creative in terms of how we're funding these to keep it affordable. Sheboygan was lucky enough to get about $22 million in ARPA funds, so we can leverage some of these dollars to making sure that we can get these projects done and complete in an accessible and affordable manner as well.
Ryan Sorensen with us has been mayor of Sheboygan since April. We're in conversation with municipal leaders across the state as part of a series to get at the heart of local government issues. And you can join in. Are you a resident of the area, perhaps a resident of Sheboygan? What questions or suggestions do you have for the mayor? 800-642-1234. Let's talk climate. Lake Michigan is rising. Water levels surged to a record high in 2020. What are the effects of the dramatic fluctuations, the rise and fall of the Great Lakes on Sheboygan?
Yeah, thanks for bringing this one up. You know, Sheboygan's identity, as you said in the intro, Kate, it's water. I mean, this is how we operate. This is what we're known for. This is how, when our city was founded, we originated our manufacturing base. You know, we're seeing higher highs, lower lows, temperature changes in the water in terms of code impacts. This past year, when we had record high waters, we had beaches wash away. We had businesses that were putting out sandbags out on their back door, you know, just on a hope and a prayer that it doesn't rain for the next few days. Otherwise, their livelihoods would be washed away. Mm. We've had people's homes that are close to the lake every few seasons just get closer and closer to the edge of that bluff that might, you know, have some catastrophic damage. I'm on the board of the Great Lakes Cities Initiative, which is made up of mayors all around the Great Lakes in the United States and Canada. We're really laser focused in terms of what we can do to make some major addresses in this. But when you talk about the impact of climate change, it's happening here and now in Sheboygan. We don't really care if you call it climate change, global warming, if you believe it or not, whatever. You know, we look beyond the politics of that. We understand that the change and the impact is happening now, and we need to do something right now to combat the impact of climate change and do our part of it.
I just want to bring up, you mentioned that you're a member of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative, and they had that recent study that found the Great Lakes region will spend nearly $2 billion in coming years to combat coastal damage made worse by climate change. What does that mean for Wisconsin and your city?
It means we got to put our heads together and find up with some good solutions. And that $4 billion, that's only known impact. That's only impact that we can kind of predict right now. We don't fully know the extent of how this will impact necessarily businesses or private homes, for that matter, or how it will impact tourism dollars, for example. Sheboygan has the largest freshwater charter fishing fleet on the Great Lakes. And when you talk about water increase in temperatures, you know, that impacts how fish spawn in our fisheries. You know, Wisconsinites, we love our fish fries on Friday nights, and that impacts the fishing industry. It impacts every different aspect down the line as well, too, and impacts how our charter fishing fleets work, our fishing industry works, and how we're able to deliver fresh fish to the table. So even, you know, things that people don't necessarily think about, when you don't see the physical aspects of it, you can see a long-lasting impact on many different aspects of how we live by the water. So it's something that we're really concerned about. We're bringing a lot of folks to the table to kind of develop a plan. Working with our DPW crew, we've developed a lakeshore plan, if you will, that really outlines our need and what is impacting for us. I mean, it's quite the dollar signs behind it to come up with. And,
the city. I just want to pause right there with Sheboygan Mayor Ryan Sorensen explaining the issues he takes on in his city on Lake Michigan, about halfway along our state's eastern seaboard. What issues in Sheboygan deserve more attention? Do you live in the area? What questions do you have for the mayor? What do you want to say about rising water levels, about erosion? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Mayor Ryan Sorensen here on the Ideas Network. We're meeting up with mayors from all over Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Today it's Sheboygan, about midway between Milwaukee and Green Bay, known to take bratwurst very seriously. And last year hosting the Ryder Cup, the Golf World's signature worldwide event. What comes to mind about Sheboygan? How has the pandemic affected the city? What about the changing climate? Join in 800-642-1234. Mayor Ryan Sorensen with us for about 9 more minutes. Mayor Sorensen, I want to turn now. You mentioned a host of companies in your area, one being Kohler, based next to Sheboygan, employs thousands of people at its plant there. What is your city's relationship like with Kohler?
Yeah, that's a good question. And just like any business, we have great relationships with many of our different partners in the area. And we're really blessed that we have this legacy family company in the area that invests in the community and that is seeing growth and expansion and a lot of their business opportunities.
So just to expound on that, you know, companies give back to their communities. John Michael Kohler, a former mayor of Sheboygan, founded Kohler Company nearly 150 years ago. How would you describe the philanthropic interests of Kohler in Sheboygan and that area over the decades? I'm trying to get at, how do you work with this powerful neighbor?
Yeah, well, it's all about relationships, you know, and just like I said, too, it's many other different companies in the area that we have partnerships with Acuity, Johnsonville, Kohler, Bemis, go down the list. You know, these are legacy family companies that have been in this area for many, many years. And, you know, it's just part of their culture. And I would say that this is a shining example of why we need to support local companies and local businesses as well, because these are the folks that sponsor our community events. They're the ones that are sponsoring the Little League games, the brat fries, helping out, you know, Amazon and these big multi, you know, conglomerate companies. These aren't the ones that are sponsoring, you know, the Little League game or helping out the school fundraisers. You know, it's these local companies that have had this long lasting impact that sees the benefit in their community. When your community thrives, your employers are doing well. When your employers are doing well, your business is doing well. So they see that holistic picture of the approach that they need to take, just like all the other companies in their area.
In recent years, you have people grassroots in Sheboygan who have really fought hard against Kohler's plan to build a golf course on the Black River Forest ecosystem. There's still, and please correct me, please, appeals pending over Kohler trying to get that wetland permit for the golf course. So how do you strike a balance between development and preservation of coastline and a rare ecosystem?
Yeah, okay, you're bringing this one up in the morning. You know, for me, it's really about common sense. I think, you know, when we talk about the legacy of our community and how Sheboygan is identified, water is the first thing that comes up. Every single year we do our community survey. What do people love most about our city? And the number one topic always comes up is our lake. When you talk, you know, and our tagline is Sheboygan is the spirit of the lake. So you have to really balance, you know, the growth in terms of the city, but also, you know, what our legacy is going to be and what impact that's going to have. So you really have to make that balance. And sometimes you have to understand that preservation is part of your identity in terms of how we promote our community as well. Are we just in the sake of making money and for profit, or do we want to have a holistic community? So there's this balance that everyone's got to take when you're talking about development.
And it sounds like, though, you have to keep the communication lines open so you really 100%. Know what the companies in your area are doing, are thinking about, and the steps they're taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. And that's why we're involved, and I'm on the board of the Economic Development Corporation, very involved in our chamber. You have to have that business relationship to understand the future and growth of the community from a business perspective.
Let's take a call. Now, Todd is joining us from West Bend. Hi, Todd. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I was just hopeful, and the mayor kind of spoke to that. He spoke of the importance of small business versus large corporate business. Small fishermen, in comparison to even charter captains, let's say, are important, and I'm hopeful that he's not going to do the same thing as Port Washington has done, where they're building condominiums in our parking lots, and we no longer have anywhere left to fish. And it was a fishing community. We're the ones that built Port Washington. But basically, we ended up getting no respect for a seat at the table. And we no longer have a place to fish. So I hope he's planning on expanding the opportunities for the people in the state of Wisconsin to take future generations fishing, and not on a charter captain boat, but in 18-foot vessels, where we can go and middle class and even poverty people that can't afford to book a state park every day of the week because there's nowhere to stay over there. And a lot of us love taking our children and taking other kids' children fishing over there, but with the wind, the waves, needing the west winds for the fish to come in, we can no longer do that. Port Washington has kicked us out of their community, and we're hoping that Sheboygan will continue to have their arms open to us, especially the small fishermen that no longer have a place to park a boat.
Todd, thank you for that. Mayor Sorensen, what is your reaction to Todd and small fishermen?
Yeah, no, I'll say just full transparency, you know, I was born and raised in Sheboygan, and I learned how to fish. Love fishing for perch, walleye, salmon fishing on Lake Michigan. Sheboygan, we have our arms open for small fishermen like Todd and everyone in between. So come on up to Sheboygan. The river, we recently cleaned up the river as well, so it's a safe and accessible location for people to put smaller vessels in. Our marina as well. So definitely come on up and enjoy the fishing in Sheboygan.
And also, you know, Todd making the point that keeping it accessible to people, to the middle class, to people living in poverty who might not be able to afford those experiences. What are you doing to make sure that this type of recreation is accessible?
Yeah, and that's fundamentally important. Sheboygan is a working class, middle class town, and that's part of our heart and who we are. And whenever we're making activities or planning, that's something that is always on the front of mind for us too, is making sure it's accessible for local people.
Ryan Sorensen with us, mayor of Sheboygan. We've been having a series of conversations with municipal leaders to better understand pressing issues at the local level. With your ideas, your takeaways, 800-642-1234. Okay, so Ryder Cup held last year at Whistling Straits Golf Course. What effect did that have on Sheboygan?
So the Ryder Cup, you know, and before we've hosted the PGA, and it was always, you know, we had to communicate with folks that the Ryder Cup is going to be, it's bigger. This is, you know, this is the pinnacle golfing event, the golfing tournament. And this event is usually held in Rome or in, you know, Paris or all over these big cities in the world. And we held it right here in Sheboygan, at Whistling Straits. And the international impact that it has is phenomenal. I always love talking about the tourism impact that this has. We had our best year in 2021. We had our best years in terms of tourism numbers on record ever, both in the first and second quarter, as well as the third quarter, blowing it out of the water with the Ryder Cup. And then you see the tail effect of international tourism coming here to check out the place that hosted the Ryder Cup. There's a big following internationally for folks to kind of, you know, go check out the former host of the Ryder Cup site. So we're hoping to see that impact for the next 3 to 5 years as well. But like you said at the top of the hour, Kate, Sheboygan's the Malibu of the Midwest. We're a premier tourism destination. So you can golf during the day, or if you're not a golfer, there are so many other things you can check out. Our Blue Harbor, Sheboygan is a foodie capital of Wisconsin. We have a lot of great local restaurants that folks can check out. You know, you can go fishing, like Todd said.
And I want to pause right here with Ryder Cup. Yeah. But what, you know, there was an influx of people from all over the world. There was an intensity of logistics and planning that must have been an incredible bar. What did you have to go through in order to deal with that type of influx?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't really our first rodeo because we've hosted the PGA before. So it was the most routine. We had a lot of planning meetings with traffic and police, and working with our hotelers to make sure that they had access and that they were fully staffed. And that local, you know, I made it part of my job is to communicate it with local folks too. Like, hey, make sure you're open extra hours during the Ryder Cup. We're going to have a lot of tourists here. You got to put on a good face and show them the good Sheboygan hospitality. Hmm. And a lot of the business owners that I saw anywhere between a 30% increase in business to 75% increase in business in that same time before the pandemic. So it was a great benefit for our local economy.
The pandemic, how are you doing in these times? How is Sheboygan holding up?
Not well. you know, we're doing the best that we can, and folks are struggling, but we're not unique in terms of where our numbers are right now, with the Omicron variant really kind of burning through our community right now. So it's something that we're really concerned about. It's something that people are concerned about. Business owners are concerned about it as well. You know, we thought we were out of the woods, but now we're at, you know, we're reporting some of our highest record numbers ever. And that's scary and that's concerning. I just feel like we're in Groundhog Day, where we're just keep reliving this over and over again. So we just got to make sure that we're supporting our businesses and our community partners to do what we can to make sure that folks feel safe and are staying healthy.
Mayor Ryan Sorensen, thank you for joining us.
You betcha. Thanks so much, Kate, for having me.
Sure. Ryan Sorensen, mayor of Sheboygan. Reach out to us to recommend your mayor for a chat. We have a quick two-part form at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we meet UW women's volleyball head coach Kelly Sheffield will be here on clinching that national championship title. What's in store for the future of the program? Do you follow the women's volleyball team? 800-642-1234 to join in. News update is next here in the Ideas Network. Now to women's volleyball and the Badgers' win over rival Nebraska last month, the UW clinching their first NCAA title in the program's history. And that is courtesy of the NCAA. Do you follow women's volleyball? How did you feel after the Badgers won it all? You have a line to UW-Madison women's volleyball team coach Kelly Sheffield, 800-642-1234. He is the 10th head coach in the history of the program, taking over in 2013. Coach Sheffield, welcome back to the Ideas Network, and congratulations.
Hey, thanks. So appreciate you having me on here today.
Well, you've had a bit of distance, nearly a month now since the team won the title. What moments from the championship are still going through your head, are really sticking with you?
So much.
I've got like everything.
Here's the deal. I've got 11-year-old daughter Lexi, and just about every morning she wakes up and she goes to the TV and turns on DVR, and so we've got some match that has been playing about every morning, and so it's a constant reminder.
A constant reminder through your head. So if you're not watching, you're reviewing that footage, you have someone in your household who just has it on like background noise, I guess.
I just left for school 2 minutes ago, and I turned off the TV and ushered her out the door so she wouldn't miss the bus. Yeah, it's on every morning here.
What were the key factors in your win? What really made the difference?
You know, this is, obviously been a challenging year or two. COVID has obviously made it really tough on bringing teams together. It's mm-hmm. a year ago, it was all about keeping everybody separate. And so you've got young players that were coming in, young freshmen or transfers that really didn't know the older players at all. And the challenges that makes for team building. So we had to find our way. We had to navigate our way through that. And this fall was different than the spring in that regard, and what we were able to do once vaccinations got accomplished and things like that. And so bringing together an older experienced group with a younger group, that took some time. We had to fight through some adversity with some injuries and things. But this was a collective effort. This was a total team effort. We had a lot of players that decided to come back for a fifth year, their COVID year that was been referred to. And that was a big part of it. And then our young players just developing as the season went on. And by the end of it, it was a team that was working in harmony very, very well.
As you bring together those young and old experience, two different camps there, I think it was setter Sydney Hilly who wrote this recent essay called My Words and talked about taking personality assessments, learning how teammates respond to certain types of communication, how to phrase things, especially in pressure moments. What have you learned about communication with the team?
Yeah, Sid, when she got here, she graduated from high school a semester early. That was something she wanted to do from a very early age, and got here, and we do these things called the DISC assessment. And it's not necessarily personality. It's more, you know, communication style and behavioral and leadership. And what you're wanting to do is in big moments, in stressful moments, how do you communicate in a way that's not just comfortable to you, but how do you communicate in a way to bring out the best in somebody else? And she went back and, you know, and memorized every single person on how to do that, you know, within 2 weeks of being here. And so I think that's one of the key things is, you know, somebody in, you know, when it's 15-15 in a fifth set for a national championship or something, you know, telling me to calm down, that might be something that centers me. But for you know, and as a reminder, well, for somebody else, when they're in the battle, telling them to calm down at that point, they may want to punch you in the face. They're like, what do you mean calm down? I'm in my element right now. I'm fired up and ready to go. And so learning what brings out the best in each other was something that we take seriously, that Sydney took very, very seriously. And we don't want a national championship with her ability to communicate.
That is very applicable to the world of work. You have to be able to work with your colleagues. They can take those skills and use them in their futures.
Oh, no doubt. My wife was a clinical pharmacist before getting here. She ran the Wright State University pharmacy curriculum, and she had all the people she was working with take this as well, and it was a game changer, she said, for how they worked with each other, how they communicated with one another.
Kelly Sheffield with us, head coach, UW-Madison women's volleyball team, has held the position for 9 years. You can join in. Do you follow women's volleyball? How do you feel about the championship title? 800-642-1234. A bit more here on communication, because I would imagine it's difficult to find words for your locker room speech to your team when you are so filled with emotions after a really critical game, whether it's pure joy, whether it's excitement, frustration, maybe disappointment. How do you take control of those emotions to ensure that you give the speech that's going to make a positive difference, like tomorrow and the next day?
It's a good question. It's not a question I get asked very often. It's a, you know, I think it depends, you know, going into the match, it's you're communicating in a way that hopefully gives them confidence and trying to keep things simple, trying to stay on message, on brand. You're trying to stay in character, you know. I think in coming out of a match, I don't think you want to get too high or too low too often. It's you can't have your team in an emotional roller coaster throughout the season. You just play too much. And so usually afterwards it's pretty short, and it's, hey, let's get back and let's watch the film, because so many times our eyes lie to us in the heat of the moment. And so let's go back and let's get a plan. But maintaining the critical thing is that no matter whether you win or lose, the important thing is you got to get better. And so that growth mindset is something that is very, very serious if you're trying to build your team and you believe in having a process and staying with that process. And so you've got to continue to find ways to be better, no matter what your record is, or no matter what the match that is already behind you. What happened with that?
Well, let's take a call now. Lisa is joining us from Reedsburg. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Good morning. And congratulations, Coach Sheffield, to you and the team. That was, you had a spectacular season, and you couldn't have asked for a better ending. And my question for you is, in the first game in the national championship where Nebraska really came out firing and we looked a little nervous or a little bit flat, what do you do from a coaching standpoint to refocus the team and get the energy and the skills where they need to be so you don't get down and get behind?
Lisa, thank you.
Yeah, great morning, Lisa. Thank you. that's a, you know, that that's the, those are some minutes right there. And so you're either going to, trust in yourself or you're not going to trust in yourself and your teammates in that moment. And that tests you. And, you know, one of the things we talked about going in is that this match isn't going to be decided in the first hour. It's going to be decided in the second hour. And so if you're freaking out in the first 5 minutes, then you've created doubts and with everybody. And so you've just got to stay with it, even though those moments are really, really big. The fortunate thing is the Big Ten forces you to go through those at times. So we've been through those. We've been through matches where we've dominated out of the gate. There's moments that we had been dominated out of the gate. We played Nebraska earlier in the year at our place, and they pounded us in the first set. I mean, they played about as perfect of a set as you can play. And we came back and won the next three. And so we'd done that before. And so I think that gives you confidence when you've done it before in against elite competition. And in our case, we've done it against the same opponents. And so it's, we were just jacked up. I mean, you know, you're playing in front of over 18,000 fans. It's a moment that you've waited for your entire life. And I just thought we were just, you know, we had a couple overpasses and we were just, you know, just a little bit, you know, hesitant on balls that were in the seams of, you know, I know this group and you just knew they'd eventually start working its way out once we kind of get it in the flow of the match. So big thing was, hey, let's not hit the fire alarm and everybody just go running in their separate direction. Let's stay together and find our rhythm.
18,000 fans, as you said, attended the finals. More than that, that was a record. How did that atmosphere compare to other high intensity games you've coached?
You know, the Final Fours are typically a little bit, you know, I say Final Fours like it's, you know, a common thing, nonchalantly, but it's typically kind of a weird environment, right? I mean, it's, you know, like we play in front of 7,500 fans, sold out every night in the field house, and the energy and how loud that is crazy. But then you go on the road and you play places like Nebraska or Minnesota or Penn State or Illinois or Purdue or whoever. And it's really, really loud in there against you. But Final Four is typically the crowds are a lot bigger. But so many of the people there are just fans of the sport or coaches of the sport. And so you're in these, you know, big massive arenas and there's not a lot of sound a lot of times, which is kind of eerie at first. but this year in the finals, you have the two biggest fan bases in our sport in the championship match. And so the majority of the fans were, you know, we're for a team and loudly for a team. And which is interesting. We've been to four of these Final Fours. The first one was in Seattle and Washington was in the Final Four. And there's very few Badger fans. And so the first semifinal playing against Texas, it was pretty quiet in there until, you know, and the crowd thought, man, we've got a chance of upsetting the number one seed. And all these Washington fans are turning for us. And so it kind of felt like a Rocky movie. you know, where in the spring we're playing in COVID, you know, and so you're in Omaha and there's only like 200 people in there. And so you're playing a Final Four, but the arena is pretty much empty. And that was a different feeling. And then this past year, you know, against Nebraska, it was really, really loud in there because almost everybody in that arena had a vested interest in one of the two teams. So I guess my point is that year to year, it's usually kind of a majority crowd that's not rooting for a team.
Mm-hmm.
But each of our experiences have been pretty different.
UW women's volleyball coach Kelly Sheffield has led the Badgers to be one of the nation's elite programs, clinching their first NCAA championship last month. Have you seen the program change over the years? What questions do you have for the Badgers head coach? What is special about the 2021 team? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Coach Sheffield here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have Badger women's volleyball head coach Kelly Sheffield here reflecting on going to those back-to-back Final Fours before winning the NCAA national title 3 weeks ago over Big Ten rival Nebraska. What will you remember about this moment, the long-awaited title? It's 800-642-1234. Coach Sheffield with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's go to Mo now in Oconto. Hi, Mo. Go ahead.
Yes, congratulations to the Wisconsin women volleyball team. And I detect a Wisconsin accent, Coach Kelly. my question is, how did you start building the program to get the kind of players that you wanted to believe in the coming to Wisconsin and your coaching style that they could come here and be successful and win and build towards that national championship?
Thanks, Mo. I think this is, we stand on the shoulders of the people that have come before us. I really believe that. This had been for the 5 years prior to us getting here, they'd been through kind of a little bit of a dry spell. But this had been a program that had been that had won Big Ten titles, that had, that had a great fan base, and so they kind of fell into kind of a tough place for some different reasons. But when I got here, the cupboard wasn't bare. I mean, there was some really good talent that was here, and there was talent that was coming in that was elite. Remember, this was Lauren Carlini, number one recruit in the country, that had already committed to come here, and we had to communicate with her and build her confidence on what her plan was. But she decided to stay with her commitment and come, and we had some players here, and we just told them what our vision is, and we got to work. I mean, there's just no secret recipe. You got to put the work in. But throughout the recruiting process, we try to be honest with people and say, this is what it is. We're not going to sell you a bill of goods. This is what it is. And if you're wanting this, then jump in. Let's go. And if you're not, then go find another place that you're going to be happy. But it's, I think we end up getting the kids that are great fits for our program and for this school. And we're a blue collar program. We try to outwork people. And, because we believe that builds confidence and at the end of the day, I want our players to be the most competent people on the planet. And so, I don't think there's a secret sauce. We just try to outwork people.
I would imagine, though, that this title and this elite program and its reputation goes a long way in recruiting. But I also want to talk about money. How do big wins like the NCAA title, how does that affect the amount of funding your program receives?
I'm not sure. Those are probably some questions to people that are above me. I think one of the things that is really critical is that you're in alignment with the administration, that mm-hmm. that their goals and our goals are in alignment. They're the same. And from the very first time that I sat down in Barry Alvarez's home office, with a couple of his other ADs, it was clear that what their goals were for the players and their experience and where we wanted to be as a program was the same as what I wanted and what I'd be telling the recruits. And so when that happens, when you have that alignment, to me, that's when it starts getting really fun.
Kelly Sheffield, head coach of UW-Madison's women's volleyball team. Let's take another call. Julia is joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Julia.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. What would you like to say?
Hey, Coach, congrats on the win. It was super fun to watch. I'm wondering about your decision-making process when it comes time to call a challenge, to use one of your challenges. In that short amount of time, do you get to watch any replays or consult with your other coaches or players? Like, what goes into that decision-making process? And also, how do you feel about the use of the challenge in the sport in general? Thanks.
Man, great questions. I love the challenges. It's, you know, it lowers my blood temperature. You know, I'm not fired up about what I perceive are bad calls anymore. It's just, hey, let's just challenge it. And it keeps me a little bit more even keeled than probably what I would be naturally. That what goes into it, man, so much, because you have maybe 20 or 30 seconds at max to make a decision. And so, you know, where you are in the match, how many of those challenges do you have? How certain do you feel about what you or your staff or the bench saw or the players out there on the court? There's been times where we've taken the fans' advice and, you know, and they've seen something. And then you're kind of going into account of, all right, how many cameras are up? Do we think those cameras are going to pick those things up? There's a ton in a very small period of time. All I know is that instant replay has made our sport better. We should be getting better cameras this year, and so we're hoping that we continue to head in the right direction.
Julia, thank you. Some other changes on the horizon to the sport. You've been a real advocate for five-year player eligibility. Why is that?
Oh, my goodness. To me, well, football gets 4 1/3 year, basically. They can play four games and then still keep a redshirt year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why they're the only sport that gets to do that. There has to be a Title IX issue in there somewhere. But, you know, it's you get away from redshirting. You get away from medical, you know, redshirting or waivers, and just say, hey, we're going to give every player 5 years to play 5 years, and they get grad school paid for, so you don't have grad school debt. To me, this would have a greater impact on more people than the name, image, and likeness does. I just think it's something that we should be offering people as a full degree, undergraduate and a graduate degree. Give them 5 years to play, because a lot of them are in there for 5 years anyway, so might as well pay for grad school and let them play all 5 years. To me, it's a no-brainer.
COVID was an accidental sort of situation that came up. Would that be a teachable moment here?
Well, exactly. I mean, we've got the players that were in college are mm-hmm. going to get that extra year. And so, and I think one of the things we're seeing in sports is how high of a level the games are being played right now across the board in a lot of these sports, because it's more experience. So it's a better product. But it's also, you know, I look at players like Lauren Barnes and Sidney Hilly. These guys are going to leave Wisconsin with a graduate degree. What an incredible gift, you know, debt-free for those guys to be able to do that. We ought to be extending this more than just the players that are going through this in COVID.
Coach Sheffield, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Kelly Sheffield, head coach of UW-Madison's women's volleyball team. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.